almost here to get her hands on the trophy and lift it aloft to really spark the German celebrations again.
You're listening to the official UEFA Women's Euro 2017 podcast.
Welcome to Utrecht. So the group stage is over and we now know the quarter-finalists of UEFA Women's Euro 2017. The Netherlands, Denmark, Germany, Sweden, Austria, France, England and Spain have overcome the first hurdle. And in this podcast we'll tell you how and we'll look ahead to the last eight. You'll hear from the tournament's top scorer Jodie Taylor, Lieke Martens of the Netherlands and many more top names. Plus alongside me are UEFA.com journalists Lord James and Paul Saffer. So guys, we're outside because it was raining last time, but the weather's improved. And three words, please, Paul, to describe the group stage.
Unpredictable, deceptive, wet.
Deceptive? I was not expecting that this early in the morning, but that's very impressive. Law, three for you, please.
It's tournament football.
Paul, you are a great statter. I often steal your stats, quite frankly. Could we have your top five from the tournament so far?
Well, first of all, you got in the opening games, Jodie Taylor scored the first hat-trick for 20 years in the competition when England beat Scotland 6-0. You got Norway out in the group stage for the first time in 20 years. All the debutants, they won at least one game, which is pretty impressive in this expanded 16-team tournament. And a couple for Sweden. Lotta Schelin has now got a new record of 6 career group stage goals, actually overtaking Melania Gabbiadini in Gabbiadini's last ever game. And Sweden also in the last eight for the 12th time in 12 women's Euros. That's all there's been.
That is why we get Paul Saffer on the podcast. Top stuff.
Follow UEFA Women's Euro 2017 on UEFA.com.
So here's how Group A finished. The Netherlands, the hosts of course, through. 3 wins from 3, 9 points. Denmark joined them in the last eight with 6 points. Then came Belgium on 3 points. And Norway, of course, runners-up 4 years ago, as Paul mentioned, without a point. So, Law, key game for you in this group, Group A?
Possibly Denmark-Belgium, their opener, which helped give Denmark a little bit of advantage over Belgium, who really came through as a strong debutant side. And I thought they might be able to eke through, but unfortunately not in the last group game, losing 2-1 to the Dutch. But yeah, possibly that 1-0.
Yeah, it was a tight group, Paul. We have to talk about the Netherlands. As the hosts, all that pressure. They finished with 3 wins from 3. And really, the tone was set from the first 60 seconds of their opener when they had a wonderful chance to take the lead against Norway.
It was a fantastic save from Ingrid Helmseth, the oldest player in the tournament, to keep out Lieke Martens. Of course, Netherlands went on to win. And Martens, along with Shanice van der Sande and the other wingers, they've really been the key for the Netherlands. Vivian Miedema, who a lot of people are talking about before the tournament, she hasn't really so far particularly impressed. But those two wingers have really torn teams apart, starting with Norway. So that, I was actually at the Denmark-Belgium game. You guys were at the Netherlands-Norway game. I actually would say Netherlands-Norway was the key game in that competition because I was expecting a lot from Norway. Usually Norway go into the competition not really expected to do much and get to the final or something. This time, everyone was expecting them with Ada Hegerberg to do really well. And of course, they lost all their 3 games, didn't score a goal. I think they've been in 16 major tournaments. They've had group stages and this is only the 3rd time ever. They've gone out of this stage and I was expecting it. And I think that opening game against the Netherlands was the key. They were outplayed by the Dutch. And while the Dutch have not really hammered their opponents, it's all been fairly narrow wins. They got 3 wins. A lot of people wondered how they'd deal with the pressure. And they've dealt with it very well. And they've got a great chance against Sweden in the quarterfinals.
So as you mentioned, a 100% record. And this is how the Netherlands have done it.
Oh, it's a great ball in! And van der Sande! What a moment to strike!
And it's Sherida Spitzer to give the Netherlands the lead. Which she does! Here is Martens. Can Lieke Martens finish it? It's deflected! And the Netherlands have a second goal!
3 wins out of 3 then, and no surprise that Lieke Martens is delighted with how things are going.
Yeah, we're really happy with the results. We had 9 points out of 3 games. It's like it's a dream that comes true. So it's really nice for us. We're really proud of it and we really enjoy it now. But in a few days tomorrow we have to focus on Saturday because we don't have anything yet. But we're really happy with the 9 points.
Well, Martins has been one of the Netherlands' key players. But Law, let's talk a bit about the fans. They've sold out all 3 group games. We were in Utrecht when there were more than 20,000 for that opener. How much do you think that's helped? How much have they harnessed that support?
Yeah, 21,732. SAF's our stat man, but that's like the one that sticks out in my mind. Because as you say, the atmosphere that evening was absolutely incredible. What fantastic hosts the Dutch have proven to be for this tournament. They've really taken it to heart, and you see so much coverage in Dutch media at the moment as well. The fans have just been great, really, really good.
They certainly have. So Denmark, Paul, as the runners-up in this section, maybe surprised some by reaching the semi-finals 4 years ago, but they certainly haven't surprised anyone by finishing as runners-up. They were very impressive and probably pretty unlucky to lose that game against the Netherlands, which ultimately was the battle for top spot.
It was, and then of course they knocked out Norway. In the end, Norway tended to be a bigger power in Scandinavia than Denmark, but it was Denmark's turn this time. As you said, when you looked at the group, I think people looked at maybe Norway and Denmark, and then the question was whether the Netherlands would challenge Denmark for second place. Of course, on the opening day, Denmark, they got a very early goal against Belgium and actually struggled for the last 80 minutes in that game, but held on. Against the Netherlands, maybe they deserved more. Against Norway, Katrine Vaye, another early goal, and that proved enough in the end. They've been solid. Pernilla Harder's done okay. We've probably not seen her full potential as of yet, but they've proved a difficult team to break down.
I've been to the Danish camp 4 times now and they are so relaxed and enjoying themselves. And Pernilla Harder, as you mentioned, when she has taken games for periods of matches, she's really led from the front for Denmark, the Danish captain. And also a word on Nadia Nadim, who has this incredible tale. You can read it on UEFA.com. Having been forced to flee Afghanistan as a 12-year-old, started playing football in a Denmark refugee camp and is now their star striker. It's an inspiring tale from Women's Euro 2017. So we will just briefly mention then Belgium, because I think we've discussed Norway and how disappointing they've been. What do you think Belgium will take out of this one, Law? Because they were the debutants, they came close, but in the end they couldn't quite get enough points to topple Denmark and finish second.
They'll take an awful lot from this tournament. I've been to the Belgian camp a few times during the group stage, and spirits were always high. They were always laughing and just hanging around the hotel. They'd invite you to come over and join them for a coffee while you were waiting to do an interview with their teammates. They really enjoyed it. I think in terms of football experience, it's you know, just second to none really for them. They've never played at this level before, and I think they'll take an awful lot from it.
Follow the tournament on Facebook at UEFA Women's Euro.
So Group B, Germany, the holders, through with 7 points. Sweden joining them in the last 8 with 4 points. Behind those two, Russia and Italy with 3 apiece. Paul, key game in this section for you.
I'm actually going to say when Russia beat Italy, although both those teams ended up going out, the fact that Italy lost that game, a bit surprisingly, meant that they didn't actually go through. When even though they only narrowly lost to Germany and beat Sweden, they still couldn't actually overtake anyone, still finished bottom.
So Germany chasing a 7th straight title through again, but they didn't have it all their own way. I was at the German camp earlier this week ahead of their quarterfinal with Denmark, which we'll preview in a moment. And I caught up with UEFA.com's Germany team reporter Marcus Yuchem. I began by asking him for his thoughts on their group stage performance.
Well, I mean, they still advanced as a group winner, coming out of the group with 7 points. They were drawing their first game against Sweden, which is always difficult to play. I mean, it was a repeat of the Olympic final. Then they won against Italy, and then they beat Russia, and they get a lot of critics right now in Germany from the media because people feel like scoring 4 goals, 3 out of penalties, is not up to the standard people would expect them to play and to score goals. So this is something they obviously have to work on going into the quarterfinals against Denmark, because otherwise they might be out after that game. And I think they just have to improve their skills up front, in front of the goal. They have to be more clinical up front, because I would assume they don't get that many chances against a team like Denmark, who is always a bit tough to beat, especially in big tournaments.
Describe the pressure on Steffi Jones and Germany when you've won 6 in a row. I guess anything other than a 7th title would be seen as a disappointment.
Well, I mean, it's her first tournament as a head coach, and obviously having won 6 consecutive titles, you would assume you go into a tournament always want to win it. But in the end, everybody knows that every streak might come to an end at some point as well. So I'm not sure that it would be a problem for them. Let's say they play a strong team in the semi-final like France or England, and then going out after having played a great game. Nobody would say something. But I think from what you can hear them talking about, they want to win the tournament. And obviously going out in the quarterfinal would be probably not up to the goals they set up before the tournament.
You spoke to 2 players. We're here just outside the Germany team hotel today. How are they, and what do they make of a Denmark team who were impressive in the group stage?
I think they're all aware that Denmark might be the toughest opponent they have to play here in the tournament so far. But still, they all feel, or I feel they are all quite confident that they can still improve their game. And it starts more or less from scratch going into the knockout stage. It starts from 0. Nobody cares anymore about the group stage results. And that's how now you have to be there when it counts for 90 minutes in a knockout game. And they are all confident they will make it to the semis.
And in terms of the tournament so far, who have been Germany's star players? Who have been the ones that have really caught your eye?
Well, there are quite a few. Actually, I think especially the young players have done quite well. I mean, we have so many on the inexperienced players on the pitch. I was just talking to one of them, which is Caroline Simon, the left fullback. She only played 5 games in her career for the national team, and she's playing here like she's ever done it before. So I think there are others I could mention, young players in midfield, if it's Sarah Debritz, or there are quite a few more, like Lina Magul. Or we have Linda Dahlmann. She was player of the match against Italy, also only capped 6 times for Germany so far. So you can see there's a good and healthy mix of experienced and young players, and I'm pretty sure they will play better as of the knockout stage.
And they're coming up against the Denmark captain in particular, Pernille Harder, who plays her football in Germany. So they know some of the Denmark players, won't they?
Yeah, especially we have Babette Peter and Lena Gosling, which are teammates from Pernille Harder at VfL Wolfsburg. And I mean, they were already doing some fun and yesterday, because Lena was at the press conference saying why it's a bit a pity for her. She has to get back home on Sunday. So you can feel they are still confident that they can stop her. Obviously, everyone knows Pernille's skills, but I think they know from quite a few training sessions in Wolfsburg how to stop her.
UEFA.com's Germany expert Marcus Jukum there. They did finish top and are joined in the last 8 by Sweden, who lost their final game to Italy, Paul, but quietly impressive. And in fairness, they were pretty much through before that final game. So maybe this section looks tighter than it really was, because it always looked like being Germany and Sweden.
It was. Sweden knew that as long as Germany beat Russia, in fact, as long as Russia didn't beat Germany, Sweden knew they could actually afford to lose to Italy, which is just as well, because that's exactly what they ended up doing. But yeah, and as you say, I think that they got what they wanted from the opening game, the 0-0 draw with Germany, which they may even have been able to sneak a win there. But the draw was important because they knew they backed themselves to pick up points against Russia and Italy, which they did. We've not quite seen the best of them yet. They were slow starters last time when they got to the semi-finals and only just went out to Germany. They were even slower starters in the Olympics, where they kind of scraped through, then end up getting to the final after some great defensive performances in a knockout stage, in the end losing to Germany for gold there in the Olympics. Nobody thought they'd go that far there, and OK, they've got it tough against the hosts in the next round, but they're definitely in contention.
Laura, you've been to the Sweden camp this week ahead of that quarterfinal. Talk to us about that. Who did you speak to and how do they feel?
I had a chat with Hedvig Lindahl and also Fridolina Rolfö, and I think there's definitely a sense of composure and relief perhaps getting through the group stage. They're absolutely confident, as Paul says, that they've got a lot more to offer. They said, you know, they rode their chances a little bit in the group stage, knowing that they could afford to lose to Italy to still progress. Italy, meanwhile, what a sad tale seeing Milena Gabbiadini in tears on the pitch after their 3-2 win over Sweden. The Brescia combination, Cristina Girelli and Barbara Bonansia, like really, really entertained me. It was possibly my favourite game of the group stage, actually. But yeah, I spoke to Milena in the mix zone afterwards, and she was, I suppose, mixed emotions, confusion, you know, those kind of things become clearer the next day. But I mean, 17 years of service for Italy is just outstanding. What a stalwart.
Yeah, of course, retiring, and we have to pay tribute. She couldn't quite engineer another run to the knockout stage for a country. But what has Gabbiadini done for Italian women's football, Paul?
I think probably look at them her in a combination with Patricia Panico, who actually was there even longer in the Italy team, got more than 200 caps and was really the central player. Gabbiadini was kind of, to a certain extent, the supporting actor until Panico retired after their last campaign, the World Cup qualifying campaign, and Gabbiadini then was the key player. This time around, I think between them, they've really carried the team. They haven't necessarily produced the talent that they produced, say, in the 90s when they reached a couple of finals, but they've kept on qualifying. This is actually the first time ever in the Women's Euro where they haven't been among the final eight. Whether there are players coming through to replace them, I'm not entirely sure. I think there could be some changes in how Italy does do, but I think the thing to watch there is the club game, which has been ailing for some time. We've seen Fiorentina turn professional. They won the Serie A for the first time this year. Now Juve also are investing heavily in buying a lot of the best Italian women's players, and it'll be interesting to see if on the back of that investment they start to improve, because we've seen France, England, certainly the fact that they're club games improved a lot has definitely helped the national team. The fact their club games teams have gone professional through men's clubs like Lyon, Paris, Chelsea, Man City investing, that's helped their national teams. It'd be interesting if what Juve and Fiorentina are doing will have the same effect in Italy.
Get involved and follow the tournament on Twitter at UEFA Women's Euro.
Group C finished like this. Austria, the surprise package of this summer's tournament. Top of the section, the debutants, with 7 points, two ahead of many people's favourites for the whole thing. France, who just pipped Switzerland to second spot and a place in the quarterfinals. The Swiss finishing with 4 points, and Iceland finishing without a point, having lost all three of their games. Law, in this section, which match stands out for you?
Possibly France drawing with Switzerland in their final game. Abelie scoring a free kick in that sort of reasonably late into the second half. Just such an emotional night, actually, particularly for Switzerland. But yeah, possibly that one. That swung it for France in terms of safety.
Yeah, it did. France were heading out for a lot of their final group game, which sounds even now amazing to say, given all of their superstars. They were a goal down and a player down against Switzerland. They had to get the goal, and they got one thanks to that free kick and a goalkeeping error, we have to say. It was a lot tighter than France would have hoped, and maybe in terms of the favourites anyway, they've been the biggest disappointment so far. It doesn't really matter how you play in the group stage, it's what you do in the knockout stages, but certainly France need to improve.
Agreed. I think the whole group stage has been tighter than they would have liked. They were pegged back for a lot of the game against Iceland, and that last game against Switzerland, they certainly did not look as if they were in control. They looked better with 10 players at times, and I think it was sort of the kick up the backside that they needed to focus and try to take control. But I mean, you know, Switzerland made it incredibly difficult for them, and France made it difficult for themselves.
They did, Paul, with 10 players, it has to be said, in that final group game, because that was ultimately the difference of them going through and going out. I watched it. They had 17 attempts to Switzerland's 8, and they played with 10 players for 75% of the game. I guess from their point of view, they'll say, well, look, job done. But what have you made? And of course, we'll get onto it in a moment, but they will be missing two key defenders for their quarterfinal.
Well, it's usually in the group stage, that's when France look brilliant. And then as soon as they get to the knockouts, that's when they suddenly start to miss all their chances and they sort of crash out. This time, maybe they've got that out of the way. In the group stage, you say they're a team that create chances, possibly lack that one finisher who can really take all their chances. Camille Abelli, Amandine Henry, they've got the goal so far, also a penalty from Eugenie Lassomme. So not, apart from Lassomme, not necessarily recognised goal scorers actually getting the goals. Their forward players slightly misfiring, although they've been creating plenty of chances. They're a very, very difficult to beat, team to beat, though, France. England know that because they've not beaten them since the 70s, when before any of the players who will be playing that quarterfinal were born. But they do have a big problem, France. Their key central defender, Wendy Renard, and her partner, Yves Perisic, who was sent off against Switzerland, they'll both be suspended against England.
We have to talk about Austria now. One of the five teams making their debut. I think most people thought it would be between France, Switzerland and Iceland for the top two spots. And there they are, top of the section, a remarkable story, having won two and drawn one. They haven't been beaten yet.
Yeah, as you said, I didn't think they'd go through, and now they are finishing 2 points clear, and they look really, really impressive. Nina Berger, who's been their key player for many years before they started to become the sort of team that challenged to qualify, that only really happened in 2013 qualifying. They qualified fairly comfortably in the end for this tournament. She's got a couple of goals. Whether she meant her winner against Switzerland, I don't know. Maybe the fact it was a slight miss kick probably helped completely fool the Switzerland keeper, but she's got a couple of goals in this group. Not all the established strikers in this tournament have been scoring, so that's fantastic. Firesinger's played very well. They've played well throughout the team. They've looked impressive in all their games. They could easily have beaten France. I mean, they got a draw in the end, which was just as good, and they've seen off Switzerland, who may have been their debut tournament, but were in the World Cup. Many people thought they'd be the dark horses, and they beat Iceland even more comfortably. So they're looking really good. And if you look on form, they've probably been one of the top teams so far, the only debutants to go through. Whether they can do it when the pressure racks up in the knockout stages, when they start to play teams from other groups, who knows? But so far, they've completely outperformed expectations. In TV ratings, I think 10% of the Austrian population were watching their game against Iceland, and pretty soon after the game finished, the president of Austria tweeted his congratulations to the team. So it's big news over there, the fact they're doing so well and so unexpectedly well.
They are absolutely loving life here in the Netherlands. I can tell you that. Many people will have seen their conga through the mix zone. We've been doing bucket challenges, which is a very simple game. Basically, you have to chip a small football into a flower pot, essentially, as much as you can. And we went to the Austria camp. I've never seen a team look so relaxed and just very much seeing this as a free hit. And you saw that in the group stage. And as Paul mentioned, I think 700,000 people watched one of their group games. And, of course, that first opening group stage win against Switzerland was the first ever Euro win for an Austria team, men or women. So they really have been history makers here. Switzerland, Law, so close to joining Austria and knocking France out, as we've mentioned. And we have to speak, I think, about Ramona Bachmann, because of all the teams and players who are leaving Euro, maybe she'll be most missed. She was outstanding for them.
Absolutely. You're going to give me a lump in my throat thinking about this again. I remember seeing her at the final whistle, and she had she'd headed towards the dugout, and she had her head bowed, and photographers were teeming around her trying to get that prized shot, and she just completely disappeared into herself, was biting the neckline of her jersey. And then all the Switzerland, weirdly enough, they were in the same half of the pitch, both the France team and the Switzerland team, and they were both in a circle with their arms round one another, Switzerland with their head bowed, with their heads bowed, and France actually silent, listening to whatever Olivier Chupinier was saying. Poor Ramona, though. I mean, she just worked so, so hard. Afterwards, Vos Tecklenburg said that, you know, she didn't want to pick out a particular player, you know, but had to pay credit to Ramona.
For the latest news and interviews, head to UEFA.com.
Well, Group D was all about England. 3 wins from 3. They scored 10 goals, more than double any other side. and they had the joint best defence in the whole tournament, conceding just once. So they finish with 9 points behind them, an almighty battle for second. Spain, Scotland and Portugal all finishing on 3 points. So it went to the head-to-head, and in the end Spain went through by just one goal. It was incredibly tight. Paul, your key game in this section.
I'd say England's 2-0 win against Spain, of course. Like in the opener, England beat Scotland 6-0, broke all the records. Jody Taylor got that first hat-trick for 20 years. But I think it was against Spain they really proved themselves, because they scored early. Then Spain had all the possession in the driving rain. England held on, got a second goal at the end. They showed just how clinical they are. They didn't really allow Spain, for all their 75% possession, any real clear chance of the goal. Karen Barth didn't really have a save to make. And that was where England really proved how impressed they were. And of course, they ended up winning the group by that record 6-point margin.
Yeah, miles clear in top spot. You mentioned Jodie Taylor there. Top scorer with 4 goals in UEFA Women's Euro 2017. And only played 2 matches. But which of her strikes did she enjoy the most?
Favourite goal so far is my 3rd goal against Scotland.
And the flick on will find Taylor. Is this the hat-trick? Yes, it is! And for the first time in 20 years, we have a hat-trick at the Women's Euros. And England's Jodie Taylor is the player to snatch the match ball.
So when I saw the ball go over to Ellen White, and just knew she was going to win the header, so I started my run. And it just landed perfectly, and out of the corner of my eye I saw the goalkeeper fly out, and I just dinked it over. And you know, the feeling of getting the hat-trick against Scotland in the first match was just unbelievable, and I guess a huge feeling of relief and excitement, and you know, everything in one. But it was just the perfect ball, and as the goalkeeper came out, it was just an instinctive reaction to just tap it over.
Well, that was Jodie Taylor and her partnership, Paul, with Fran Kirby, in terms of two attackers, comfortably, I think, the best and the strongest in this tournament so far.
Absolutely. They first came together in 2014, in the friendly against Sweden, which England won 4-0. And at the time, Fran Kirby had never played a top division game. She only played in the second division for Reading. Mark Sampson saw her potential, got her in, put her alongside Jodie Taylor, who'd only just come into the team herself at quite a late age. And they gelled immediately, and they were doing so again in this tournament, even though in the intervening period both of them had serious injuries. Fran Kirby was picked in April, even though at the time she hadn't played for months.
Yeah, well, you spoke to Fran Kirby earlier this week, Paul, and it was interesting to hear her response to your question about the confidence of this England team, which was high going into it, but you asked her whether the results so far have only added to their belief that they are serious contenders.
Everyone, you know, coming into the tournament was really confident. Everyone believes in the players that we've got, the staff members we've got. Everyone around the camp believes in the team environment that we've got. So I think now it is just adding more belief and more confidence each game goes, because we're performing well as well. You know, we're not just here to try and win games. We want to perform as well. And I think that's the main thing that we've really got this year. And we're being clinical in front of goal, which is obviously great for a striker like me.
So behind England, a mighty 6 points behind them, as you mentioned, Paul, Spain through by the narrowest of margins. And can you just explain this three-way head-to-head? Because it's not as clear as it might look on paper. Why did Scotland only miss out by just one goal?
Well, in UEFA, we go by head-to-head rather than overall goal difference, which you may see in FIFA tournaments and other things, which is good news for Scotland after the opening 6-0 defeat, because England weren't involved in that three-way tie. It didn't count. However, Spain had beaten Portugal by 2 goals and Scotland only lost to Portugal by 1 goal. So Scotland could overtake Spain if they won by 2 goals, riding Portugal also lost, which of course they did. Scotland, sure enough, got 1-0 up, but they couldn't get that second goal. So in the three-way head-to-head, it was Spain with a positive goal difference, finished second, Scotland third, Portugal fourth, although narrowest of margins between them.
Well, Paul did that as a gust of wind came, so his notes blew away. So that was all somewhere inside your brain, that knowledge, Paul. But there we go. So Anja Signoll bowed out with a win as Scotland coach before heading to Finland, but unfortunately for Scotland, they couldn't make it through. What did you make of Spain? Because there are many people's dark horses, but they did struggle at times, but they did just enough to get through.
They did, thanks to that win against Portugal at the start. It was a big call from Jorge Gavilda to leave out Vera Boquete, who many people thought would be our most important player here. So he's put the forward line in the hands of people like Vicky Losada instead, and Jenny Hermoso. And they started off well in that first game, but they just didn't have the cutting edge against England. They were the opposite of England. They had plenty of possession, but just didn't seem to turn it into chances or goals, which is, of course, what England had been doing for the whole tournament. And again, Spain, They had plenty of possession against Scotland, somehow weren't able to score. But they come in with a clean slate, like everybody into the knockouts, and taking on Austria, a team who before the tournament, you'd have thought Spain would be warm favourites to beat Austria.
Yeah, well, at the other end of the pitch, Spain's goalkeeper Sandra Paños was quietly impressive throughout the group stage. There have been some errors, certainly from the goalkeepers, but also some incredible saves, and here's the best of them.
Clever ball forward for Shanice van der Sand, and it's a really good pass as well. And it's an unbelievable save by Ingrid Hjelmseth. It's a shot, and it's a terrific save by Jacek. Good running from Henri. Oh, it's a wonderful save by Zinsberger. In it goes. Oh, terrific save by Schult. Italy, just like they did against Russia, coming on strong late on in the game.
So Spain and England through, Paul, in this section. What do you think Scotland and Portugal will have learnt from their debut Euros?
Well, starting with Scotland, they've been coming so close. Ana Sinyal, who you mentioned before, she took over in 2005. She's the longest serving coach in this tournament now, of course, going off to Finland. She's from Sweden originally. They did well, of course. 2009, they missed out on away goals in the playoffs against Russia. 2013, they missed out of conceding two goals right at the end of extra time to Spain. But they finally qualified, this time with a win in Iceland, actually. Pretty impressive. But they are unlucky with injuries. Kim Little was injured. Jenny Beattie was injured. Emma Mitchell was injured. And then after that first game against England, Jane Ross was injured as well. So their most important attacking and defensive players were actually out. And unsurprisingly, that made it very difficult for them. But they still ended with that win against Spain. They were just quite able to turn their dominance in a way against Portugal into goals. But they did bounce back excellently from that opening defeat against England, which might have destroyed some teams. As for Portugal, they really outdid themselves. I mean, they were by far the lowest ranked teams to qualify. They came through the playoffs. They surprised Finland and to a certain extent Romania. In those playoffs, only beat Romania on away goals and extra time, so they barely scraped in. They were the huge outsiders in this tournament, huge outsiders in the group, but they gave Spain a good game, beat Scotland, and ran England close as well. And that's extremely impressive from Francisco Neto. He's got a long-term plan there. He says he wants to build on this to make sure that in 2021, their young players keep coming through and that they can keep challenging for qualification. This doesn't just become a one-off.
The tournament on our dedicated Instagram account at UEFA Women's Euro.
Let's preview the quarterfinals then, and it starts with the host, the Netherlands, against Sweden Saturday, 6 p.m. local time in Doetinchem, and a big test for both these sides, having been fairly comfortable in the group. Law, what do you make of this game?
Netherlands have been marginally more impressive in the group stage than Sweden, but I suspect Sweden have a lot more to bring. You know, the Dutch have created a lot of chances. Viviane Medema yet to get off the mark, which is disappointing because, you know, we thought that we might have more attempts to practice pronouncing her name. Didn't we, Chris?
Medema.
Very good. Sweden very organised. And I think that opening game against Germany was, what could these girls produce? And perhaps flattered to deceive slightly, but I think they will have a lot more to show in this quarterfinal.
In terms of the other countries, you mentioned it there, their leading marksmen, apart from Jodie Taylor, haven't necessarily scored. I think of Germany and the Netherlands, but Lotte Hellin has for Sweden. Blackstenius has two as well. So they're... their key players are scoring, which heading into the knockout stages must give them and their teammates a lot of optimism.
There is, particularly as when we discussed their Olympics run, what was it about really was their defence and Hedvig Lindahl in goal. In particular, so they'll be happy they're getting goals at the other end. Blackstenius, of course, a young player coming through. Lotte Schelling, been there, done that. Her 6 group stage goals are now a competition record. Of course, she was the top scorer in 2013 when they were the hosts lighting up the tournament. This time they're taking on the hosts in that quarterfinal. And this is the sort of situation where Pearson Target has always been able to inspire her players. She's got a great record in knockouts, not just with Sweden, but before that when she was United States manager.
OK, Law, score prediction, please. The Netherlands against Sweden.
Oh gosh, this is going to be a tough one.
I warned you about this, so...
I think it's going to be 1-0 Sweden.
1-0 Sweden. Paul? Well, you've sort of given it away.
I have. Well, they drew last year. They played an Olympic qualifier. Sweden only needed a draw, and they drew 1-1. Mia Demme scored quite early, but Sweden equalised. I wouldn't surprise me if exactly the same happened and Sweden won on penalties.
There we go. That's quarterfinal one. The same day, Saturday. This Saturday, by the way. 20:45 local time in Rotterdam. It is the holders, Germany, against Denmark. We heard from Marcus earlier, Law. Just how much pressure do you think there is on Germany to make it through to another semi-final? And for Denmark's point of view, is this a bit of a free hit?
I don't know if it's a free hit for Denmark as they get to this stage. I think this is, you know, business now. Germany probably will emerge victorious. But there's no pressure perhaps on Denmark, if that's what you're asking. But I don't think they see it as necessarily a free hit. I think they'll be very focused.
Paul, where will this be won and lost? Can Denmark get Pernille Harder on the ball? Can they play their game, or will they? Do you think they'll allow Germany to play their game, if you like, and maybe look to hit them on the counter attack? Because that isn't Denmark's natural game, if you like. But will they feel that that's the best way to be a little more defensive, given they're playing against the might of Germany?
We'll see if Denmark have that extra level. They also had that extra level when they beat Sweden in their last qualifier, when they needed a win to make absolutely sure they wouldn't have to go into the playoffs, and they did that. So they can do it against the best teams. Whether they can do it against Germany, I don't know. They're another team that are good at penalties. They knocked out France at this stage 4 years ago, and nobody really gave them the hope of getting through that quarterfinal. Whether Germany are just that little bit more solid than that France team, whether Germany are always going to find a way to have the performance they need. I think we've seen from Zenifer Marazan, she's still creating. Anya Mittag's not really been in the goals as yet, neither is Mandy Islacker. So we'll have to wait and see if the goals come from Germany other than from penalties. Don't maybe that's enough. Maybe they can win this just by winning and scoring penalties.
Portugal, Euro 2016. Okay, score prediction then.
2-0 Germany.
2-1 Germany.
Both going with the holders. I think I agree as well, just about. Quarterfinal 3 on Sunday, 6 p.m. local time in Tilburg, is Austria the surprise package against Spain? Well, the Spain team reporter here in the Netherlands is Joe Walker, and here's what he is expecting from that quarterfinal.
Having seen Spain's 3 group games, I would certainly say we can be expecting them to dominate possession, if not necessarily create a lot of chances, as we saw against England. I think they had 78% possession and yet didn't really have a shot on goal. And then against Scotland, it was completely the opposite. They had all the possession, hit the woodwork 3 times. You know, you saw Gemma Faye make some incredible saves, and they just didn't have that look in front of goal. So Spain will try and monopolise the ball. However, what they need to do, I think, and I think that's what Jorge Vilda is going to work on in the next couple of days, is just that getting that final pass right, because a lot of the time they have possession around the box, they have the chance to shoot, but will elect to, you know, play another pass and sort of try and score the perfect goal, if you like. And I think they need to maybe just hit it, to use a cliche.
They were seen as one of the dark horses coming into the tournament. Do you think they've justified that tag? I mean, they were mightily lucky in a way to get through even to this stage.
Yes and no. I think the way they started off the tournament made people really sit up and take notice of them. They outclassed Portugal. Admittedly, Portugal are the lowest ranked side in the competition. However, they were quite lucky to squeak through in the end at Portugal's expense. And some people might have said Portugal, on the basis of their group stage performances, actually deserved to progress instead of Spain. So Spain, in a way, started off by justifying this dark horses tag. However, losing to England and then, rather disappointingly, losing to Scotland, I don't think they have. I think they've got a lot more to show for themselves. And I think that maybe they've been given a second opportunity at this tournament, which they need to take with both hands. If anything, they're now going to be playing against the remaining dark horse in the tournament, which are Austria, who've been mightily impressive.
Yes, a huge game for two sides who, I guess, maximum expectation was the quarterfinal. Now one of them is going to be in the semi-final.
Yeah, I mean, they've both done really well to get this far, and one of them, as you say, is going to make it to the semi-final and be within 90 minutes of reaching the final, which will be well beyond their wildest dreams of when they touch down in Holland. You look at the form, you look at the way both sides are playing, you'd actually have to say Austria are probably favourites to knock Spain out. However, Austria, being debutants, Spain got a bit more experience. You know, they played at the World Cup, and they've got players who played in the, quite a lot of players who played in the Champions League. You know, they have experience at this level, and I think that that might just show going into this game.
And just finally, Spain didn't pick Buchetti for this tournament. Do you think they've missed her? And do you think they'll miss her in the quarterfinal?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it doesn't take a genius to see that Vera Buchetti is a very good player. And also, I think the fact that Spain struggles in front of goal have, you know, bar the 2-0 win against Portugal, they haven't scored. While they did look like scoring against Scotland, they really didn't look like scoring against England. They had 78% possession. They played a lot of nice passes in and around the box, but didn't really test out the goalkeeper. And, you know, with a player of Buchetti's ability and class in the side, being able to unlock defences, you know, they might well have had a more comfortable passage through the group stage. And I certainly think going into a knockout stage, why wouldn't you want her in the side? I'm sure if you ask any of the players or fans, they would say the same thing. However, it's the coach's decision. I'm sure he has his reasons, and he will be hoping to be proven right.
Thanks to Joe. Score prediction for this one, Law.
Can I be really bold?
Yeah.
Austria, 1-0, long ball. Spain can't deal with it.
Okay, so Law's gone with her heart. Paul, you're always a man who goes with your head, so what are you going to go for?
3-0 Spain. The big bad wolf will blow down Austria's house made out of whatever the house is made of.
There we go. So one of you's gone for long ball winning, the other's gone for the Spanish tick-attacker. Now, the fourth quarterfinal, which I think is the one everyone is most looking forward to, it is a clash of two teams who, coming into this tournament, were seen as contenders. England against France, Sunday, 20:45 local time in Deventer. Now, England haven't beaten France since 1974, I was reading. Can they do it this time? Surely they've never had a better opportunity the way they're playing.
I wouldn't have expected England to be favourites going into a quarterfinal with France, but that's the reality that England's reward for winning the group. They wouldn't have expected France to end up second behind Austria, but there it is. England very comfortable. England were able, although England have only had one fewer day to prepare, they rested everyone on Thursday, so they'll be fresh. And obviously if they keep performing as they keep performing, they will win that game.
We're going to have to wrap this up shortly because you are off to interview Mark Sampson at the England camp. A couple of quotes from him that I saw after their final group game. He said, "We're where we wanted to be. We have the momentum and the confidence behind us. We're in form." Now, I don't know if that was just talking about England, but maybe just a slight dig at France. And Tony Duggan as well, if there's one time we want to play France as an England team, it is now.
I mean, I spoke to some of the players after the game against Portugal, and they're not afraid of calling out France. Mark Sampson went on to be even more bold in this press conference than some of the quotes you've put in there. And he did it against Spain as well. He wasn't afraid to, if you like, start a war of words to, you know, play the mind games, whatever it is we talk about in UEFA Champions League. Mark Sampson, he was pretty humble 2 years ago in the World Cup, which was his first tournament. This time, he's the experienced coach, really, compared to the other coaches he's been taken on. He's not been afraid to show it. I think they've been very happy with their preparations. He picked his squad in April. He said, "These are my 23. Allowed everybody else to worry about it. I mean, everyone's performed as expected. The back four, great. Jordan Nobbs in midfield, absolutely fantastic. Tony Duggan, Frank Kirby, getting the goals. Of course, this is knockouts, the group stage, you have to forget about it. But if they keep doing what they're doing, they will beat France, as I said before. But then France, if they perform as they can, they've probably got even more talent in their team than England."
I really am enjoying the mind games between Echarny and Sampson, to be honest. The French coach initially said, England won't want us. England won't want to have to face us in a knockout type phase. And now Mark Sampson's coming back and saying, "Excuse me, I have a wealth of experience at European international competitions, and you had better learn who you pick on, basically, because I've got a war of words for you. I love it."
Score prediction then for England against France, Paul.
Well, fortunately, Mark Sampson will be listening to this after he spoke to me, that actually I'm going to predict that England will win, which kind of goes against my head in a way, because I just somehow think France will perform, but I have to go with the evidence of what we've seen, and on that evidence, England will win 2-0.
And they are, of course, without those two key defenders suspended, as we mentioned earlier on. Law, who's going to win? Who's going to go through to the semi-final?
I think France will get something. Well, no, they won't get anything from it. They'll get a goal from it, but England 2-1.
That is it for this podcast. The quarter-final lineup is confirmed. We'll know the semi-finalists by Sunday night, and we'll be back next week to preview the last four. Until then, enjoy the tournament and the four quarterfinals.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Women's Euro 2017 podcast.